This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
This episode is brought to you by Sailee. Sailee eSIM provides internet connection wherever you travel, available in over 200 countries, and it saves you money on roaming fees. Sailee eSIM is secure and you always get 24/7 support. As one of our loyal listeners, you get access to an exclusive 15% off discount on Sailee data plans. So download the Sailee app today and use the code BOLDLYGO at checkout or go to the link in the show notes to get this promotional 15% off offer. This offer is only for a limited time, so don't wait.
Okay, hear me out. Taxes can actually be interesting, especially when they intersect with points, miles, and travel. Ever wondered if your Amex welcome offers are taxable, or if using a business card for personal expenses will send red flags to the IRS? Well, we brought in CPA and fellow travel enthusiast Rachel Earle to break it all down. She's not just a tax expert. She's grown up in the world of travel and is earning and redeeming points for business class travel with her family. This episode is packed with real talk, surprising insights, and strategies you probably haven't heard before. And trust me, if you earn or redeem points, you'll want to hear what the IRS actually cares about and what they really don't. And if you somehow love taxes enough to want to deep dive yourself, Rachel's provided us some reference footnotes that will be linked in the show notes. Trust me, this is the tax talk you didn't know you needed, but you'll be glad you listened to.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch. I've got a fantastic guest for you all today. But before introducing her, I want to send a quick reminder to all of you that you can catch this show in its full entirety in video format on YouTube. And for those that watch us on YouTube, keep in mind that in audio form every Friday, we release our quick hits, which are our quick up-to-the-date travel news and points and miles news. So remember, we are on all the platforms and would love for you guys to be able to check us out everywhere we are. Now, I want to welcome a fantastic guest today. This is a woman who we met at Travel More last year. She said, "Hey, I've heard your podcast," and come to find out, she's a CPA. And so I felt like what would be more exciting or more boring than to have a financial advisor and a CPA on a podcast to talk about travel and points and miles. But this one is a must listen for all of you that have tax related questions when it comes to points and miles travel. So Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I got to throw out the disclaimer that A, this could be entirely boring because again, we've got a financial advisor and CPA in the same room. Although I will say when sitting down with my clients, they typically love it when I'm talking with their CPA as well and we're strategizing. So we're going to let the listeners into the same room, except we're not talking personal financial planning and retirement investment strategies. We're talking points and miles. So that brings me to my other disclaimer, letter B, which is this is for essentially entertainment value. We're not going to extrapolate any personal tax advice or personal financial advice from this. I know I have the disclaimer at the end of every episode, but everyone, you should always consult your personal tax advisor and your personal financial advisor when it comes to these things. And if you happen to need one of either, well, you got two on the show here that can chat with you on a one-on-one basis as well. So, Rachel, welcome to the show. Before we get into talking through how points and miles can impact our taxes and what to know, and trying to keep it very lively so we don't have listeners falling asleep, tell us, where in the world are you? We already know what you do for a living, but tell us about how you got into the world of points and miles as a CPA.
Yeah, so I'm located on the central coast of California. I'm halfway between LA and San Francisco. I got into the world of points and miles only a couple years ago. I actually have been traveling pretty much my entire life, practically even before I was born. My mom was pregnant with me when we flew to Poland and she met her in-laws. So I've been traveling since I was very, very young. And points and miles, I had just had a baby and was doing a late night feeding and kept seeing things on points and miles and traveling for free. And in my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, daycare is so expensive. How are we going to ever be able to travel again? Because I love it. And that's how I found it. Just started following random people and didn't quite understand all the lingo, like transfer bonuses and the Blue Bank. And so I kept following people and started found podcasts and just binged a ton of podcasts and then ended up buying a course as well and have been into it ever since. Because I was like, I want to be able to travel. I want to do this with my family. But with cost of living being so expensive and daycare is really expensive, I needed to find a way to be able to do it at a more cost effective way.
That is awesome. So you experience what I think a lot of people do when they come into the world of points and miles and just understanding, man, there's got to be a better way to do this. So I'm curious, after all the dissecting the podcasts and the blogs and all the things, did you start out with the kind of traditional Chase Sapphire preferred card, or did you jump in? Were you super analytical and already had a full-blown strategy of what you were going to start with, what you were going to redeem? So I'm really curious, how analytical did you jump into the points and miles world?
I didn't start with the Chase Sapphire preferred. I came in when there was a bonus on one of the Chase Inc. cards, and I was like, I'm getting that, because I knew I wasn't going to redeem right away. And I was like, well, I'm going to get the 90K instead of, I think it's regularly 75K. So I got that one. I think it was the Chase Inc. Cash. And then I got the Chase Inc. Unlimited, I think. And I think it took me a little while. It was my husband had gotten the Chase Sapphire Preferred before we redeemed, and we had that one redeeming. So I had transferred my points to his. And I think even the Capital One Venture had an elevated bonus. So I went in for that one even before I got the Chase Sapphire Preferred. So it took me a little bit, but I knew how we were going to do it. So yeah, a little bit of all of it. I was like, jumped straight in and did have a plan. So, because I was like, yeah, this will work. Don't worry.
Very cool. So I absolutely love that. And since you mentioned your husband, I assume he's your player too. Very willing off the bat. Did you have to kind of coax him a little bit? Or is it, hey, you're the financial expert here, so what you say is what we're going to roll with?
I would say for years, he'd been like, well, if we just use credit cards, we can collect points. And I was like, this doesn't make sense to me because it takes years to be able to redeem for a plane ticket. And so once listening to this, I'm like, oh, this is how you quickly accumulate and learn the different strategies to accumulate them. Then I almost became the player one. So convincing him was like, okay, yeah, sure. Like it was one conversation. I didn't have to, like, I know a lot of people will sometimes wonder, oh, is somebody going to come after me? Is the IRS going to come after me? Is this illegal? Is it legal? And he was on board. I just needed the convincing of, or the teaching and learning of, how is this possible to keep it going? So once I figured out how to do that, I was all in, and he was too. He lets me do the more analytical, and he's like, all right, let me know what I need to apply for. I keep track of all the stuff.
Got it. That's absolutely perfect. Well, Rachel, let's jump in to the meat and potatoes of the conversation, because we've come up with a list of questions that we feel like most people probably have in the world of points and miles. And some of it is just probably in the back of most people's minds, but there could be some people that are hesitant to start this process because these are on the forefront of their minds. So the first question we're going to start with, in the most kind of basic sense, are points and miles subject to income tax? Because I've seen conversations, arguments about this multiple times over the years. So yes or no, are points and miles subject to income tax?
I'm going to break it up in two ways, earning the points and miles and then redeeming them. Earning points and miles, no, they're not subject to income tax generally. So any points earned from a sign-up bonus, those are not subject to income tax. Points earned from just normal spend, even if you're getting 1x or you're getting 2, 3, 4x based on bonus categories, those are not subject to income tax. I know Capital One Venture has had a sign-up bonus of 70,000 points plus $250 cash that's redeemable on the travel portal. That is not subject to income tax either. My husband has gotten that one and we redeemed it. And because it has a very specific use and you're not getting cash for it and it's not increasing your wealth, which is really kind of the point of the IRS, I think, what their threshold would be, it's not subject to income tax. What is subject to income tax is referral bonuses. So you refer your friend, your P2, that amount will be reported on the form 1099 miscellaneous, MISC, as other income. It's essentially a commission for referring someone. The rule with the forms 1099 miscellaneous is that any vendor that pays out to somebody more than at least $600, that amount must be reported on the 1099 miscellaneous. So if you receive a sign-up bonuses of 50,000 points, let's assume it's 1 cent per point. That's going to be about $500. You probably won't receive that amount from the bank. But the IRS rules are every dollar earned, no matter the source, is subject to income tax. So, and I'm not 100% sure on how each bank will value each point. So I'm not sure what the value would be, but those are the rules.
Okay, perfect. So I think that makes a lot of sense, because a lot of times when people are making the argument that, oh, I had to pay a 1099, whatever it may be, for the points that I earned, the deeper down part of the conversation was, oh, well, I did refer 4 or 5 family members over the year, and that was what the value came from, because everyone else was like, no, I've never paid income taxation on getting points at all. Even for myself, when I look at receiving points, right, when it comes to sign-up bonuses or just spend on cards, I've never had to pay anything for those things. So I love the clarification there, because I think someone that's getting their whole family into points and miles and taking advantage of some of these like double point offers, where Chase is like, hey, or Amex is like, hey, instead of 20,000 Amex points per referral, we're giving you 40,000 Amex points per referral. Yes, that's great to you. But as you said, there is likely some sort of valuation for those points, which will create some sort of taxable income, which could catch some people off guard.
Yeah. And I mean, generally, it depends on your tax rate. I mean, if you're, let's say, 25%, and I'll do a quick calculation, if it's you got the $600 times 25%, it's $150 of tax, which may or may not be worth it to you. And you're like, yeah, but with the extra points, I can get so much value from traveling. Okay, great. I wouldn't worry about the extra tax and how much it's going to impact you and lose sleep over it is really the point. It's just more something to be aware of.
That makes perfect sense. Now, let's change it. What about those people that have cashback cards and can get rebates and such? Does that rule work differently when it comes to income taxation, especially with points? Because you could decide that, well, I could turn my cash back into, well, cash back or turn it into points. Does one create a taxable event over the other?
Yeah, so we can touch on redeeming the points and miles for specifically travel. The IRS actually did issue guidance from 2002. So keep in mind, it's over 20 years old. It's probably not going to be updated anytime soon, so you don't have to worry about it. but there's a lot of administrative and technical issues that would make it too difficult to address how to value those points to redeem them for travel. And in case anybody's wondering, the IRS notice is 2002-18, and it's frequent flyer miles attributable to business or official travel, just for those who want to know. But I would have pushback on that if there's a lot of questions on how to value it. So the valuation of the timing, how do you decide when to bring it into income? Are you doing it when the points are earned, when they're redeemed, or when the travel was used? Because we all know that can be about a two-year process of, let's say in 2022, you earned the points, 2023, you booked the travel, 2024, you took the travel. So there's a timing issue. The valuation, how does each bank value each point, and what do they value it at? So how do you, does each bank value each point? And also, and then if you have a transfer bonus and to a different, to a bank, that can cause an issue as well of like, well, how do you value it with a transfer bonus? So there's a lot of complications that is why the IRS wouldn't tax you on redeeming it for travel. So they're not, IRS isn't going to recuse anybody of underreporting their income tax because they earned or used their points and miles, or at least earned their spend and everything. And the IRS notice did state that any future guidance is going to be applied prospectively, meaning going forward. So not retroactively. So anything we've done, we don't have to worry about it. If you are going to do it for cashback rewards, then there's a little bit more nuanced of that, of who is it and how are you redeeming it? So if you're an individual, and I'm going to cover that as an individual, meaning you're filing a Form 1040 and any other related state tax returns, and a business. So you're filing a formal business tax return, meaning a Form 1120, 1120S, a 1065 for a corporation or partnership. If you have a single member LLC, that's going to fall under the individual because you're not filing a separate federal income tax return for the business. So if you receive a rebate or you're redeeming your points for cash as an individual, that's just a rebate. It's not taxable income. It just means you spent less. You got a discount. You used a coupon at the store. That's kind of what it is. And that goes for personal using it for business cards or individual cards. Now, so I'm going to tell a little story. It's kind of interesting. I found an article about a couple that used Amex Blue credit cards in 2013 and 2014, and they earned blue cash rewards dollars. They used these to purchase Visa gift cards and then used the Visa gift cards to purchase money orders to make deposits into their bank accounts. This is the first time I'd ever heard anything like this. And it went to tax court, but the IRS argued that it was taxable income. And so they were going to have to include an additional $36,200 in 2013 and an additional, I think it was $277,275 in 2014. So it's quite a big chunk of change.
Wow.
Yeah. The tax court had two rulings. The purchase of the gift cards were not taxable income. And even if they were used indirectly to fund money into their bank accounts, using those blue cash rewards dollars to directly redeem the money for money orders and putting cash into their bank accounts would be included in taxable income. So the court stated the IRS had a policy of excluding from income credit card rewards for product or service purchases. And the court states it wants the IRS to update its policies rather than having piecemeal litigation, which they haven't done. So I would say even the tax court has, there's pretty good past litigation of, if you're redeeming your points and miles for cash as an individual, you're fine.
Got it.
Now, if you're using a personal card as an individual for a work-related expense, so you purchase something, you're going to be reimbursed by work. You know, one of those, the ideal expenses where you get to load up your points, but it's not going to cost you anything. If you receive any kind of benefit, then those rebates that you receive, those could be considered taxable income by the IRS. So I'm thinking like, oh, you have used Lyft on a work trip and you had added that, the Chase offer onto the credit card and it's like 10% back, that 10% back could be considered taxable income. Now, business cards and business related expenditures, it's a little bit more roundabout. So I would say generally, yes, it's considered taxable income, but not in the way that you think. You're getting those rebates or those or cash back. It's really what it is. And when you do the accounting and you're reconciling the account, it's a decrease to the expenses. and therefore an increase to income. So that's how it's more of a, from an accounting perspective, how it becomes taxable income. It's just decreasing your expenses.
Hey everyone, I hope you're enjoying this week's episode. DeAndre here, and I just wanted to interrupt briefly to remind you of two things. First, be sure to sign up for our newsletter where we give you direct access to travel updates, news you'll want to jump on in the points and miles world, and our continuously updated card offers to maximize your travel rewards, often before they're ever mentioned in the show. Also, if you didn't already know, we have a private Facebook group where we share news as it breaks, ideas, and other things that don't make it into the newsletter or show many times. And that's the best place to get your points and miles question answered directly by me and other travel enthusiasts. Both of these links will be in the show notes. Now, back to the show. Perfect. So in the realm of then business expenses, one of the things we talk about often on the show is that you don't have to have a glorified brick and mortar business to be able to get a business credit card, as an example. And we hear people talk about this a lot. I've mentioned it on this show as well. And yes, there's a lot of different things that can qualify as a business, right? Typically, if you have some sort of 1099 income, you drive for Uber, you sell things on Etsy, even if you're selling stuff on Facebook Marketplace and other things, you technically do have a real business quote. So the question here, though, is for those people that are like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like I have a real business. I can't really get a business credit card because I don't have a real business. What's the reality around, will the state or the IRS, go after me if I acquire business credit cards and use them for non-business expenses when I don't have a quote unquote real business? What would be your response to that?
I would say, no, you don't really have to worry about it. The IRS or state taxing authority is not going to go after someone for applying or acquiring a business credit card or using it for non-business purposes. The IRS doesn't keep track of credit cards owned by a company that's kept track of by the banks. They have bigger fish to fry. They have more important things to worry about than, are you using this credit card appropriately as outstated by the bank? I mean, if you think about just kind of the database that you would need to keep track of all these credit cards and who owns them, it's too much work. I have trouble trying to just get through on the tax practitioner hotline to talk to somebody if I have a question. So I wouldn't worry about it. They want to make sure that you're not deducting expenses that are not in the normal course of your business. That's what they're more worried about. So you can use your social security number to apply for a business card because you'd be filing as a Schedule C on your tax return, which is a business, and it's just for sole proprietors. So it's totally fine, but they don't care what card you're using. They just want to make sure you're not deducting things you shouldn't be deducting.
And that's a perfect explanation, because one of the things I've mentioned many times, whether it's on the show or I've mentioned it to clients that have asked me, is I talk about the fact that a lot of people, when they do start a legitimate business, they don't go out and immediately get a business credit card. They use their personal card for business-related expenses, and they're allowed to deduct those expenses that they're putting on their personal card when it's in the ordinary course of their business. On the flip side, if you have a business card that, let's say, you are using for business expenses, but you also use for personal expenses, to your point, as long as you're not deducting things that you shouldn't be deducting because they're not used in the ordinary course of business, then that's not a problem at all. So it's understanding the rules and ramifications. And I love how you explain the database needed to be able to extrapolate who owns what card, where the transactions were, and all these things would be nigh impossible to be able to track. So I know for me personally, with my multiple businesses that I have, I use QuickBooks Online. I can track everything. I can link my card. I can even link both my personal and business cards. So if I have personal expenses on a business card or business expenses on a personal card, I can categorize and select the ones that are actually applicable to be put into my profit and loss on QuickBooks. My question for you, Rachel, is what would be your recommendation on how someone should do the accounting? That's how I do it, but I'm not sure. Is that the best way? What would you say?
If somebody has a business, a formal business where they have a set of books and they're having to report business tax returns, so your corporations and your partnerships, I would say, yes, that's a good way. You have credit card is listed as a liability on the balance sheet and you're reconciling it every month. If there are expenditures, transactions that are personal, they should not be going on the profit and loss statement. That is correct. So you can put it to your draws. But I did have one client this past year who had put a personal card and they had an account for a credit card, but they only put the business expenses there and excluded all personal. And so when you're excluding transactions, you can't reconcile it. And so now as the tax preparer, I don't know that I can rely on these set of books and that I'm recording everything that's accurate. So from an accounting and tax perspective, it's really, you want to make sure all the transactions are recorded. And to make my life easy, please only put business credit cards on the business balance sheet. I think I've heard of some people, they'll do this, but they use a personal card or they might open a business card, but they're putting all personal expenses on there. They might keep track of the occasional business and then submit it separately of, oh, okay, I essentially made a contribution to my account, to my company, and then made a deduction for the same amount. You know, I purchased office supplies, whatever it is. But keeping those credit cards on there and trying to keep all your personal off there and all your business on there makes for really clean accounting and it makes it much easier. That's just the accounting side of having to prepare during tax season makes my life easier. But it's understandable in the card churning and the points and miles that you want to be able to use whatever expenditure is possible to earn those points and miles. So it comes down to being really good about your record keeping and making notes on the transaction so that when the accountant does go in there, they know, oh, okay, I can tell this was, you know, it's like, oh, I went out to lunch, but this was personal. It's not business. That can be helpful to them as well.
And I think for that very matter is why I had to tell my CFO that, yes, I will record the transactions on the cards because it would be a nightmare for me to try to explain to you and for you to try to figure out what's going where because it's essentially a beautiful mind with like the string and all the things when it comes to like cards and expenses and all those different things. So I can appreciate from the accounting side where it's simple. And for my team who's listening to this, I apologize in advance that I make it so complicated because I'm so into the points and miles world. So I love that explanation. Rachel, this isn't exactly, you know, points and miles focused, but a lot of times, especially when you're starting to build up reputations with Citi and Chase and Amex and all these banks, you start getting offers for doing more business with them, especially when it comes to like business checking accounts. And they'll say, hey, open up a business checking account or a personal checking account, do X, Y, and Z deposit, hold this amount of cash or money in there for a certain amount of time, and we'll give you $300, $600, $900 for these bank bonuses. And this is a whole different world. I know plenty of people that kind of hack this game where they kind of bounce from bank to bank and kind of get all this free money built up for these bonuses. My question for you is, what's the taxation of that? Is that something that someone should be aware of or worried about?
Yeah, I think it is important to know about it. Whether they should be worried about it really depends on their income level. So any income that you earn from a bank bonus, it's considered interest income. And it's reported on the form 1099 INT. Unlike the 1099 miscellaneous, the 1099 interest has a minimum threshold of $10 being reported. So these bank bonuses are usually, you know, it can range from like $50 to a few hundred dollars. They're going to be reported to you. So you just report it on your Schedule B. It's not a big deal. What some people may not be aware of is that they're subject to the net investment income tax, which is an additional 3.8% tax on top of the regular tax rates. Now, the people that would be subject to that are those with the modified adjusted gross income is $200,000 for single and head of household taxpayers, $125,000 for married filing separate, and then $250,000 for married filing joint and qualifying widows and widowers with dependent children. So if your income is below that part, you don't really have to worry about it too much. Now, it's only 3.8% for the net investment income tax, so it's not that much, and it is offset by investment interest expense. So I've used it before, and I think it's a great opportunity. I'm like, oh, we'll save it for travel, you know, when those things that can't be offset by points and miles like food. So I think it's fine. or if you just needed the cash, it's not a big deal because in the end, it's still free money. You may have to pay some tax on it, but you're still out ahead, you know, of the money that you made. So that would be for businesses and for individuals. Now, a great opportunity for this is if you have an overpayment of tax and you're going to get a refund, open up the bank account ahead of time and have it direct deposited. And you get the money and you don't have to worry about changing your payroll. And we did that this year with our federal income tax return refund.
Smart. Smart. Absolutely love that. Now, Rachel, I'm going to throw a curveball at you here. So let's say hypothetically, I'm a W-2 employee. I don't know. Let's just say I'm a physician. And I don't own a single business. Should I be thinking about opening a business entity to be able to get some of these business bonuses or these business card signup bonuses specifically? Well, what's the thoughts there? And what if I have a business and have a business entity and get a business card, but my business really didn't have any income or for that matter, any expenses? What are the parameters there that I should be aware of?
But say if you're an individual and you want to open a business card, use your social security number. Don't go to the IRS and get an EIN. You're only going to do that if you have to file something with them. And you could cause more trouble for yourself in terms of you don't file anything. Either it could be payroll tax returns or a business tax return. And the IRS is like, hey, where's this return that you were supposed to file? And now you're having to deal with IRS notices. And it just becomes taking time out of your day that you frankly probably don't want to do. So I'd recommend don't do it unless you are opening up a separate business. Now, in California, a lot of people, I think just in general, will open up a single member LLC because they want to open their business. And I would hesitate to do that unless there's some real, you'd want to talk to a lawyer about that. In California alone, for opening up any corporation or an LLC, it's a minimum of $800 tax every year. So depending on where you are, is it really worth the money? You know, California is one of the more high tax states, but I would say it's probably not worth it. Your second question of, okay, you have a kind of a small business, maybe it's Facebook Marketplace. You can still open up that business return or business card, but use your social security number. And you could put your individual or your personal expenses and your business expenses, just keep track of them for when it comes time to report them on your tax return. But if you just kind of have a small side hustle, you do it occasionally, it's probably not worth it to open up a separate entity just to get that EIN so that later you can get maybe a business card with your EIN and with your personal. I don't think it's necessarily worth it for all the extra hassle you may have to go through.
So Rachel, I know we were talking a little bit offline that there's a little bit of a different or nuanced strategy that someone could use if they're, let's say, bold enough in the spirit of the brand Boldly Go, if they're bold enough when it comes to tax withholding and maximizing points on estimated tax payments. We talked a little bit about this offline. I would love to hear you bring that back for the listeners and talk through how that could potentially be a strategy that no one's really thought about or mentioned. So I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, a lot of the travel points and miles influencers out there will say, oh, if you can pay your estimated taxes with credit card, you can. It's a great way to earn points. I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense to me. And then my mind goes to, okay, well, if you're withholding, or you have withholding on your income, if you have withholding on your W-2, what's to say somebody isn't just going to decrease their W-2 withholding so that they can then make estimated tax payments later? And I would say you have to be very careful about that because IRS requires that you have to pay estimated tax payments if you owe at least $1,000 with your last tax return. And they also have what's called a safe harbor requirement, and you have to pay at least 90% of the tax shown for the return of the taxable year or for the current year, or at least 100% of the prior tax year, whichever amount is less. So if your adjusted gross income in 2023, because that's what I looked up, was more than $150,000 for married filing joint, then you would have to substitute 110%. The point being is that if you underpay and pay too little, the IRS is going to issue underpayment penalties and interest. And the IRS requires that you pay each quarter 25%, but it's not every 3 months. It's January 1st to March 31st is due April 15th. Then April 1st to May 31st, so that's 2 months, is to do June 15th. And then you have June 1st to August 31st, and then it's September 1st to December 31st. So you're not looking at, okay, well, just take my income every quarter and divide it up by four for the year. It's not quite that simple. And so if you're underpaying a certain amount and they say, oh, you owe 25%, let's say it's $5,000 by the first quarter and you pay $4,000, well, then $1,000 is going to be owed, or there's going to be penalties owed on the $1,000 and interest on top of that. And in the past couple of years, the interest rate has been raised by the Fed. And so those penalties and everything that you owe are going to be more than they have been in the past few years when interest rates were really low. So now you're looking at, I mean, I'm not sure what the interest rate is now, but it's probably more than the 2-3x you're going to get on your credit card. Plus you have the credit card processing fee. And then you have to look at your states as well, if you're going to be paying state estimated tax payments. So you'd really have to run the numbers and decide, is it worth it?
So it's definitely a strategy that's potential. And the reason why I mentioned this is because I found it to be something I actually never thought about. I think most of the people that talk about estimated quarterly tax payments, like I make, and I have a lot of clients that make, and especially a lot of people that are highly compensated are typically doing, it's just the nature of the beast, especially if you're a business owner. It's just, you just kind of have to do it when you run a business. Never thought about the fact that someone who maybe is W-2 could say, let me change my withholding so that I, instead of getting a tax refund, I get a tax bill, make that bill larger, and I'll just plan to pay that quarterly so I can have some additional points and miles. I think that's a very interesting strategy, but it's important to bring up that nuanced point about if you don't do it right, it can end up costing you more than you get. And I think that's a really, really important stipulation to make, that while that is a very bold strategy, it could come back to bite you if you don't do it correctly.
Yeah. And especially in California also is extra weird. 30% is owed by the first quarter, another 40% by the second quarter, nothing by the third quarter, and then they want the remaining 30% paid by the fourth quarter. So you've got timing issues there in California. I'm not sure what other states are, because I had thought about that on my own of, well, would that make sense? And I'm like, you know what? I just don't want to deal with the hassle. I'll just have the withholding and just deal with it then, because I didn't really want to deal with it. It's too much brain power that I didn't want to do.
Got it. Well, Rachel, this has been fantastic. I think we hit on a lot of the questions that people either have in the forefront or in the back of their mind when it comes to points and miles. And I think there's been a lot of debate, but there's really never been definitive explanation that we can say even has come from someone that has credibility in the space of, as you are, as being a CPA. I hear all the time that I am able to bring more credibility to the world of points and miles by being a financial advisor. But I think there's especially nuances to this industry that you want to hear from more than just an influencer about, right? You want to hear from someone that, I mean, literally is eyeballs deep into the tax code at least once a year, which is why, unfortunately, you know, this would have been great to have aired during tax time as people are preparing. But of course, we have to, you know, mind your own sanity. So I know you thank me for scheduling this after the April 15th tax deadline. So all the listeners, bookmark this so you can refer back to it when you start thinking through tax season next year as well. So Rachel, this was fantastic. We've been getting into a lot of information, a lot of nitty gritty, a lot of stuff that's probably boring to so many people, but good for them to know. So I want to transition and do something with you that I've never done with another listener before, and do a round of just a couple rapid fire questions, because I want to hear some of the more fun parts of points and miles and travel for you. So I'm going to hit you with a few rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
Awesome. First one, best family trip you've ever taken, and it could be points and miles based or not.
I think last year when my husband and my son went to Poland, we only went for a week, but my grandparents got to meet my son, and I don't think they ever thought they would ever be able to meet their great-grandchildren. They'd met one before, but that was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Were you able to use your points for a portion of that trip?
Yes, we used points to fly out there. We flew out on Air France. We took business class. I'm not sure I would do it again with a 2-year-old because they don't sit still well, and Air France requires them to sit window seat. And so there was an aisle between us, so that was kind of hard. But having access to lounges when you're exhausted and hungry is great. But then we had a direct on lot Air Polish back from Warsaw, LAX direct.
That's incredible. Next, most underrated travel tip or hack.
I love the app Wanderlog. And I know a lot of people use TripIt. I like Wanderlog because it has a map on it. And so I can see what is near each other when I'm going to travel somewhere. And I can decide, okay, my day is going to be in this area of whatever city, so I don't have to be crossing the city back and forth.
Oh, wow. I love that. I've never heard of that app. I have touted TripIt on this show many, many times. And I'm going to have to do some Googling and look into this one. So I'm very curious. I love that. That was great.
So back in 2019, oh, this is another great trip. My husband and I went to France and we saw the Women's World Cup, the semifinals and the final in Lyon. And then we went up to different parts of France and saw the Tour de France because my husband loves cycling. And I used Google Maps to try and pin things of where things were in different cities so that we wouldn't have to cross the entire city every time I wanted to see something. So I'm very grateful for their Wanderlog because the Google Maps that I was using at the time was cumbersome.
Awesome. Awesome. Next question. City that you're most dying to get back to?
Lyon. The food was great. It felt still like a small town and it was easy to get around and it was absolutely gorgeous. I would love to go back there.
Best hotel or resort you've ever stayed at using points and miles?
I don't think we have yet. We're going to. So I'll go do this. Well, this summer we're going to be going to Prague and we're going to stay in the Andaz for 2 nights. And I'm very excited about that.
Awesome. Andaz is a really cool Hyatt brand. So I love that you're getting a chance to experience the Andaz brand. It's really eclectic, very, very, I don't know what the word would be, hip is what comes to mind. All right, last one, and then I'll let you off here. Biggest travel deal or savings or redemption that you've scored? So kind of what have you done? It could be one of the trips you referenced already, but kind of the biggest either redemption or travel deal that you scored that just really blew your mind.
I'll do two. One was not our points. It was pre-points and miles. And I don't remember the redemption because I didn't know anything about it. But somebody gifted us points and miles to take a trip after my husband and I got married. So that's when we went to France and Poland and saw the Women's World Cup, the Tour de France, visited my grandparents in Poland and visited some friends that are out in Poland. So that was great because it wasn't ours that we were using. And then probably the greatest deal we had, Air France last year going to Poland, it was a 25% transfer bonus from Chase. And we did business class and my son got a 25% discount. So it cost us, I think, 121,000 Chase points in the end. And it cost us about that much to fly back in economy on the way back. So I would say that was a pretty good deal. It's just stacking all those transfer bonuses and discounts.
Perfect. Well, Rachel, this was fantastic today. Where can the listeners follow you and follow your travel journeys and maybe get a little bit of tax advice when it comes to it as well? Feel free to plug all the things.
Yeah, well, I'm not actually really on social media for travel stuff. I keep that pretty private. But I'm actually going to be starting a YouTube channel soon, Via Shorem Tax, V-I-A-C-H-O-R-E-M, in educating entrepreneurs and small businesses more about how the tax code works, because it really shouldn't be that scary.
Perfect. Well, we will be eagerly awaiting for when you launch the YouTube channel. You've been a wealth of knowledge today. I'm sure many listeners got a lot of value out of this. Hopefully, for listeners that are still sticking around, we didn't have too many that fell asleep as we started breaking down the tax code and the tax rules. But I think this was a very good baseline of information for anyone, whether you're on the personal side of points and miles or business side or both. Fantastic. So, Rachel, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. For the listeners out there, if you want to continue to grow in the points and miles space, continue to follow our show. Make sure to subscribe, like it, share, tell your friends. You've got friends that are business owners and they're wondering about the tax implication of points and miles. Send them this episode. And make sure to follow Rachel on her YouTube channel when that goes live. I know it's going to be a wealth of knowledge. As always, we appreciate you listening in with us today, and we will catch you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.